from our perspective, as the buyer, it's incredibly important, and a lot of planning, a lot of time, you know, goes into the integration planning. And ideally, in a, you know, pre-COVID world, there would be face-to-face meetings, workshops, broken out by subject matter, with, you know, recaps at the end of the day where you bring everybody together. And those meetings would continue once everybody went back to their, you know, respective homes. But it really just depends on the transaction. You might have one or two priorities for a transaction, and so you'll put almost all of your efforts into those priorities. Or you might have just a broad, you know, a broad approach where you want to cover everything, and then you're going to have an army of people, you know, looking at all the different issues and just trying to get through it in the most efficient way possible.
Yeah, I echo Kim's efforts there, because I do think that it depends, as with most of these, on the transaction and what's happening, how much the buyer does want to have those detailed meetings and those detailed conversations. You know, in some instances, that may not even be something that you're that's on the table initially. I've always found that having the conversations makes diligence a little bit easier to complete, so that you know exactly, you know, if a question is vague or not, or maybe more broad than what you would like. You know, having the discussion of what's really being looked for does tend to help drive that to completion, which then helps with integration later, because you know what they're looking for.
And it seems like the dialogue is probably going to be conducive to a better integration eventually too, right? Where you're actually talking to people as opposed to exchanging lists and pieces of paper on its own.
It's definitely a collaborative process between the buyer and the seller, right? Integration takes both sides. And so the sooner you can establish those relationships and start knowledge sharing and building that trust, the better.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then just to mention, because it kind of comes up, so from a reverse diligence perspective, again, sort of with focus on eventual integration. Aaron, what kind of topics is the target looking maybe to establish early on, just to make sure that everything's going to be, you know, make for a good marriage down the road?
I mean, aside from the financials, I think that one of the things that we've always asked about in reverse diligence is really, what is the plan for our entity? You know, is it going to be a standalone? How is that going to work? And getting some of that information kind of upfront in the reverse diligence process, if you will, because then you'll know what that integration plan is going to look like, you know, depending on what information you're gathering from the buyer of how they're going to treat your entity post-closing. It helps you really plan for what steps you need to take, whether that's with entity structures, employment agreements, and things like that down the road. So kind of doing that homework upfront definitely helps you as you're starting to plan for your post-integration work as well.
It also helps take some things off the list, right? You can take some things off that aren't going to be as important for the future business.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yep. Okay. So, and then just again, in the diligence period, thinking about some of the, of course, you know, as you've mentioned, it's about more than just the negotiation. The parties are trying to understand where they're trying to go with each other, and who the different players are, what the personalities are, and how they're going to work together. I thought I would ask each of you here just to list a few of, again, with a focus on eventual integration of the companies, what are a few of the topics from this sort of, you know, assorted list of diligence topics that are particularly of potential interest, depending on the transaction, of course, but in the eventual integration aspect of things. What would you say, Aaron?
I would probably say compliance, third parties, and HR. And I think, you know, from my perspective, the people are generally very important in these transactions, and learning, you know, kind of upfront, you know, who those key people are that are going to be moving things forward. And then of course, third parties, mostly talking about customers there and making sure that the customers are going to be happy so that you don't lose any of that revenue. And compliance, I mean, especially if you're talking about publicly traded companies, you know, there's so much work that if you have not previously prepped for an IPO or you have not been publicly traded, if you are acquired by a publicly traded company, there's a lot of work and a lot of things that you have to get done and ready for, you know, kind of day one, if you will, or that needs to happen pretty quickly in your 30, 60, 90 day plan.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Kim?
Yeah, I agree with Aaron. I think compliance is a big focus, particularly because the perception, right or wrong, oftentimes is that a smaller company may not have as robust a compliance program as the acquirer, if it's a strategic acquirer. So getting compliance right is important from the beginning. The other thing I would say is, you know, the bullet is third parties, but really I would say the go-to-market plan is critical. And how do you integrate customers? How do you integrate suppliers? What kind of trade issues will the parties face going forward? That's something that has to be right from the moment that you close. Otherwise, you know, you're behind. So